Hello and welcome to A Plus Show, episode 11. My name is Michael Apple.
And my name is Alec Hogg.
This is your 30-minute show where we pack in snippets of useful information on news, politics, business, investments that hopefully leaves you richer from an information perspective.
News you really need, news you can use, news that will enhance your life.
Indeed. I'm not feeling very parched, Mr. Hogg. It must be...
Look at you.
It must be the coffee I'm drinking out of this mug.
What a fun thing. I mean, thanks, Roadcaster.
Yes.
The guys at Roadcaster in Cape Town say that they're big fans of the show.
Yes.
And they were very excited to hear about my new Roadcaster, Roadcaster Pro 2, which is it's off the charts amazing. And yeah. So they sent us coffee mugs. Isn't that cute?
Cheers, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you. my home studio, which is working really nicely, would not be possible without the equipment we have. And it's working like a bomb.
You know, Mike, I am a little older than you. And I remember the days of reel-to-reel when you were doing audio, where you literally, to do editing, you had to take a tape reel and I think a guillotine, they called it, and cut it and put sticky tape to edit together. And to go from that to what this incredible little box does for you now. And they say here, everyone is a podcaster. And it truly is. They've brought podcasting or high-quality professional audio into the scope of anyone. Now, it sounds like we're doing an ad or for a cup, but I love these kind of innovative products. And well done to Roadcaster for doing what they've done.
Democratizing podcasting.
Here we go. Democratizing radio.
Yes, that's right. Alec, dive us straight into the markets. It's been a 30-year high of inflation in the US. Madness.
40. I got it wrong. I said 40. I can't count anymore. 40-year high. And today we've got a 2-year low for the South African rand. Today being Thursday, the 14th of July, just in case you're listening or watching this at a different time. 17 Rand 23. And we started the week at 16 Rand 80. We were 17% stronger 3 months ago. It's been an absolute wipeout. We'll have more in the program from Magnus Haystack on that coming up. Mm-hmm. Probably talk a bit more. Markets generally are looking to the United States for their lead. The United States is looking to its companies that are now producing their quarterly results. Every three months, American companies tell their shareholders how they've done in the previous 3 months, and share prices adjust and the markets generally adjust accordingly. We've had the first results coming out today. JP Morgan's profits are worse, much worse than expected. They were down 28% in the quarter. That has hurt the share price and it has hurt sentiment. Delta Airlines beat its revenue expectations, so they had more sales in the 3 months than the market had expected, but they didn't get to their earnings. Their share price is down by 5%. So it's already off to a pretty weak start to the earnings season. All of the intention up to now was what's going to happen with inflation, which, as you said earlier, is our 40-year high in America. That was for the month of June at 9.1%. Mm. We, by the way, in South Africa, at 6.5%. It's not often that South Africa's inflation is way below those of our major trading partners. But that has been, it's almost like inflation could have peaked. Almost certainly it has. Reason for that, biggest part of inflation, I think 60% of it, was due to energy prices. Energy prices due to the oil price. The oil price in the last week alone has come from $108 to $98. Mm. So it's a significant decline and likely to go lower according to all the experts. So put it all together, now the Americans are saying, oh goodness, the reason why share prices are going to fall is not because inflation has to be tamed by very high interest rates. It's because the companies are not doing as well as we thought they were doing. Mm. So let's see what happens later in the week, but we're off to a little bit of a weak start in the earnings season, and that carries on now for the next 3 weeks.
In terms of the Fed, are they still continuing to hike by a full basis point? Did I read correctly?
That was the expectation. It now looks, with the oil price coming back, that it'll be 3/4, in other words, 0.75%. Mm-hmm. But this won't be the last interest rate hike. They have to try and find a way of increasing interest rates to cool inflation without getting to an overcool situation.
You don't want to crush the economy, yeah.
Talk about Goldilocks.
Yeah.
Not too hot, not too cold, and it's a high wire act. But so far, so good. Stock markets may react now to what's happening with the earnings from companies and not so much from the interest rates, because it's almost like they think perhaps the Fed will actually pull this one off.
And closer to home, the MPC, are they looking at, I mean, we're 0.5% above our 3 to 6% target band. Are they going to look at a 50, 75 basis point hike? What's likely to happen there?
It's likely they'll follow what happens in the rest of the world. Even though the inflation rate in South Africa is lower, it's going to head higher. It has to when you have your currency dropping by almost 20% in 3 months and you're an open economy. And what that means is that South Africa's half of our performance in this country is to do with imports and exports.
Yeah.
So 50% of what goes on in South Africa's economy is either imported or exports. And that means if the rand weakens, you import a heck of a lot of inflation, and not just from the petrol price, which we all know about, but other things like roadcasters that we buy from offshore. Mm. And that then adds to inflation. So as far as South Africa is concerned, it's almost like there's a bit of a pent-up inflation that's going to come through and start working through. And the Reserve Bank will do its best to not put the economy even deeper into recession, because we're really bumbling along at a very, very poor rate. In America, they haven't got enough people to fill the jobs. In South Africa, clearly, we got rid of half our people, we still wouldn't have enough jobs. Yeah. That gives you the contrast between the two countries. So also a very difficult act. But so far, the Reserve Bank in South Africa has done a good job. Are they likely to significantly increase interest rates to push this economy deeper into recession? Probably not.
Mm. End of the markets?
Well, we got such interesting other information to talk about, and particularly on the whole state proofing of communities. It's a growing theme, Mike.
It is, and it's something that came out strongly in two of the interviews that I did this week. The first one was with Jacques Broodrijk, the campaigns manager at AfriForum. Jacques Broodrijk.
Yeah, that's some.
At AfriForum, civil society organization, and I asked him about the work that they're doing with law enforcement. And I watched a documentary that they did called Open Borders. And as the name denotes, they went to Bite Bridge and they had a look at how porous our borders are. So what you have is a combination of neighborhood and farm watch volunteers. There are 155 neighborhood and farm watch groups across the country. It's 10,000 volunteers that work within their communities, work with law enforcement to make their neighborhood safer. It's as simple as that.
Yeah. Now, you know Jacques from when he was a journalist.
Yes.
Something slipped out in that interview, and he mentioned commandos.
Did he say commandos?
It slipped in somewhere. I heard it.
Oh.
It sounds to me like it's a bit like the old commando system.
I didn't hear that, but I know that their neighborhood watch structures on the border work with the SANDF. And when I was watching the documentary, I thought this is purely AfriForum, you know, putting out the work that they do. Then I saw camouflage uniform, and then I saw an R5 rifle. And then I thought, whoa, hold on, those are actual soldiers, and they're patrolling together. They're doing joint operations. So I found that very interesting. And then I went through Jacques' Twitter feed, and I found that they are deploying drones, unmanned aerial vehicles, to assist Tshwane Metro Police Department during recent protests in the west of Pretoria. And it got me, you know, wondering whether there is going to be more of this relationship between a civil society organization and law enforcement going forward. And he said that it's perilously political at times, where law enforcement organs of the state don't want to work with civil society organizations, including AfriForum. But it got onto this whole notion of how do we make communities safer, fill the potholes in, fix streetlights. And he spoke about communities looking to state-proof against a crumbling government. Here's Jacques Broodrijk.
Not just the mismanagement of, say, law enforcement and health services, wrongful arrests, people getting sentenced for the wrong reasons, absolute abuses of power, corruption. Basic services aren't being delivered anymore. Potholes aren't being repaired. Streetlights aren't being fixed. Neighborhoods aren't secure. So AfriForum has started playing a very large role in not providing those services, but taking control of those services ourselves. So our members and our volunteers countrywide started getting involved and started doing these things ourselves. And hence, that's where we got the neighborhood watches. That's why we've got AfriForum that has already spent tons on repairing repairing potholes. That's why we see the guys getting involved when there are blackouts, get physically involved, trying to state-proof communities against this nationwide collapsing country.
The overwhelming message that I got there was, and South Africans love to moan. As citizens, we can moan about a problem.
We're nowhere in the league of the Brits, but anyway, okay.
Or we can just roll up our sleeves and get on with it. Yeah. And he said AfriForum prefers to do the latter.
In the economic world, we talk a lot about public-private partnerships.
Yes.
Because there's a realization by the state that they can't create jobs, they can't get
people
employed.
They're not supposed to, yeah.
Well, at one point in time, they thought they could. Yeah. And it's almost like there the rock bottom's been reached. The state, the ANC, let's not say the state, the ANC has come to the realization, oops, we're not very good at this stuff and what we were. Our idealism or demagoguery is no longer applicable in a modern society. So if we're going to get anything done, let's work together with the private sector. Now, if you can do that on the economy, why shouldn't you be doing that in policing, in areas which really matter?
Yeah.
Because unless you can get the policing right, unless you can get crime down, unless you can have a safe society, you're not going to get the investment that you need to make a flourishing society. So I'm wondering, post-2024, I'm doing a lot of thinking about that. I'm talking to a lot of people about that now. Post-2024, these kind of organizations who voluntarily make a contribution, whether they're going to be more warmly embraced by the coalition that'll take over when the ANC's kicked out of power. Mm-hmm. And then the upside could be quite dramatic.
Speaking of 2024, you spoke to ANC veteran Mavuso Msimang. I'm yet to listen to the full interview. Disclosure, that's on my watching
list for
the night.
It's 40 minutes, so it's quite an investment of your time, but it's worth every minute of it.
Tell us about that.
He's a guy who's they talk about the good ANC and the bad ANC. He would be one of the leaders of the good ANC. He's 80 years old now. Mike, he grew up about 5 kilometers from where I grew up. He was already politicized at the age of 18. He left the country he was on his way actually to study overseas. He was a very bright guy. He went to a Catholic school and obviously excelled. He was then on his way to an international university when Sharpeville happened. And he said, no, there are bigger priorities. He got hold of MK and joined MK in Tanzania, was sent to Moscow to go and learn how to make homemade bombs.
Mm-hmm.
It's a different world that we're talking about here. But here's a young guy who came out of school and dedicated himself to the ANC, who he says should lose power because it needs to be cleansed. Mm-hmm. Isn't that interesting? He was the head of Corruption Watch for 10 years, worked with when David Lewis started it. He started it with him.
Mm-hmm.
Mavuso was the chairman. David Lewis was the chief executive. Both of them stepped down simultaneously about a year ago. He played a fantastic role at Home Affairs when Home Affairs went through its golden period of things actually working there before Mrs. Zuma got her hands on it. At that point in time, he was behind that whole turnaround. He was also very instrumental in the rebooting of our tourism sector, very strong in conservation, just a high-quality, classy human being. Mm-hmm. And in the conversation that we had, we focused quite a bit on his call in the past week for Cyril Ramaphosa to step down. And I said to him,
step down or step aside?
Well, step down, step aside. Same thing. Go. Leave union buildings.
Pending something.
Just leave.
Just leave.
Just get out. And the reason why he must get out is because of Palapala. Yeah. My retort to him, as any sane human being would say, is what about David Mabuza?
Yeah, who's next?
Taking over.
Yeah.
And he said, well, no, that's not the solution. And here's the little clip of what he recommends.
If the ANC agreed to put forward an interim leader who would commit to just being a caretaker like Motlanthe was between Thabo and so on, it would serve the country, even the ANC, very well. And Cyril, who is really having this problem at a time when they are all the things that are happening that require 112% attention from a president, this Palapala thing is going to be an albatross around his neck.
And indeed, it is already an albatross. He's those who supported him in the business community are also saying, you have to leave, you have to go. Mm. Because at the best case scenario, and Mavuso Msimang makes the same point as well, best case scenario, what were you doing with $4 million in cash or even any dollars in cash? What happens behind the scenes, the backstory, is that when they trade in game, to avoid tax, they pay each other in cash. So if the president of the country is evading tax, which is almost certainly what happened here, there are all kinds of other stories, but that's the most plausible solution. Well, then, if he's a tax evader and he's the president, why shouldn't the rest of society follow his example? Or they will go to jail?
Yeah.
Question mark. It's not just... And we also spoke about Arthur Fraser and his very obvious agenda in all of this. But that's actually irrelevant. What is relevant is... was it a crime committed? Not to say that Ramaphosa's corrupt, but if he's committing criminal acts, then he needs to carry the can for that.
Well, he is yet to give any explanation to the South African public.
But he can't.
Even to his own party, except to say, yes, the money was stolen.
Michael, you tell me what he could say. How can you? You can't get out of this. It's like there's the smoking gun. It's in your hand. The body's lying there. Oops. I was cleaning it and it went off.
Yeah. Yeah. Well.
Vietnam. Tell me about Vietnam.
So I spoke to Connie Mulder, who's the head of the Solidarity Research Institute. It was a fortuitous time. Load shedding is at its height at the moment.
Never been this bad. I mean, we've had load shedding since what,
2007.
2007. It's never been this bad. And that's hard to believe, isn't it?
So I asked him about how do we get out of this? And once again, the solution, similar to AfriForum's solution, was us as citizens have to take charge. And he said, if the government tries to get in our way, we'll go through them. If they want to be a part of the process, we will go around them. Because they've had 15 years, they've been stuck like a deer in the headlights. They have proven themselves, I'm not sure I heard you say proven. They've proven themselves incapable of fixing the quagmire we're in. It's an electricity crisis. Now, a lot of people will say, we deserve to, and the president might well do this, declare a state of disaster, or a state of emergency around this. His answer is, just like in COVID, did more government help us or will less government help us? He says, for the past 15 years, we've had government interventions. They've done absolutely nothing. We need less government here and we need more responsibility taken up by the citizens of this country. Stick those solar panels on your roofs. Feed with a generous, handsome feed-in tariff. Feed the electricity you don't use. Sell it back to the state power utility. But there needs to be a couple of prerequisites in place there. But flood NERSA, the National Energy Regulator, with applications to be able to get your hands on that feed-in tariff. And I asked him, where have you looked for inspiration on how this will work? And he said, Vietnam. And he said, in 2007, Vietnam was going through a very similar crisis, except what was dissimilar was our network was crashing because we didn't have capacity. Theirs was crashing because their economy was growing too much. So the state came, the communist state of Vietnam, dumped ideology for pragmatism. And he said, I love this particular line, he said, South Africa is a sort of toxic mix of incompetence and ideology. But he says, even the Vietnamese Communist Party saw it for what it was, realized they needed less state intervention, and they opened it up and said, we will give a tariff to every Vietnamese citizen who slaps a solar panel on their roof. Within 12 months from this date, you will qualify for a handsome feed-in tariff. And within a year, they were able to generate 4,500 megawatts. The year after that, 9,000 megawatts, 6,000 of it within 1 month alone. And I then asked him, what has the South African government proven itself worthy of over the last 15 years? Where to from now?
We can very easily solve this. But the one thing that is outstanding, and that's the one thing that several studies, I read four or five studies that sort of studied this Vietnam miracle. And the factor that they said was critical was plain simply political will. Political will existed to solve this problem. In South Africa, after 15 years, we need to face the facts and look in the mirror. The political will does not exist here to solve, load shedding, at least not from the ANC. And that means we need to go and find that political will somewhere else. And that's where we are coming in and saying, but we've got the political will to solve this. We've got the will to solve this, of course. We don't want to be stuck in the dark with an economy that's going back to the Middle Ages.
Back to the Middle Ages.
That's an interesting stat. So, hey, Vietnam, if you guys put solar panels on your roof, we will buy the electricity you give us. And within a year, there were 4,500 megawatts, which is bigger than Kusile and Medupi. They've got, I think, six packs, 3,600 megawatts. It's quite an extraordinary achievement if you think of how long it takes to build a power station, and of course all the you can't take money, yeah. You can't steal money when guys are putting a solar panel on their roof, can you?
Yeah.
I'm getting a little cynical. We mustn't be cynical, but we have to be skeptical, and you have to then ask, why do we have this insane situation where you can unleash the human potential, you can unleash energy, just let people do it.
Yeah.
Let companies do it. Well, the reason we can't do that is because of the control. No, we as the ANC have to control electricity in South Africa through Eskom. Now, finally, they're all hitting a rock bottom, but they are not addressing the problem with the creativity that is required. Well done to these guys.
And that dovetails nicely into your interview with Jordan Hill-Lewis.
It does, Michael. There's a backstory here as well. We had this interview about 10 days ago, and while just after I'd started, was in the evening. Jordan's he's a busy guy. Yeah, he's 35. He's at it. He's been in the job now for just under a year. Anyway, so we arranged to talk at 8 o'clock at night. We were about 3 minutes into it, and off went the electricity. So we had no lights, and unfortunately the connectivity just meant we had to postpone. Mm. But that was quite fortuitous, because they're now in a situation to do something really dramatic. And exactly like we heard earlier in the program, they are just saying, sorry, government, we're not listening to you anymore. We're just going to do what makes sense, and come and sue us if you want to. Let's listen to this clip.
We want to encourage big businesses in Cape Town that have got significant roof space to sell us excess power. And for the first time, instead of running up a credit, if you want it, we will actually EFT you cash at the end of the month for the power that you sell us. We want to check that the payment system can work, that we can send you cash at the end of each month for the power you sell us. Once that system is up and running, and that's really a matter of months, that we just make sure that it is all working well, we can then start to roll that out to residences, to private homes as well.
Isn't that amazing? There's your Vietnam story. It's right there. Opening up to If you're a company that's got lots of roof space, we have fantastic weather in South Africa. We haven't used the sun to the degree that we could. Instead of opening up to everybody, we've gone through these IPP projects where there's a guarantee that there'll be an offtake at a certain fee, etc. There's no market mechanism that's been allowed into this. Now he's saying, stuff that. We in Cape Town need the power. If you can give us power, we'll buy it from you. And by the way, we'll buy it from houses as well. So it's going to be an unleashing of something very special here. I'm sure they're going to get uphill. I'm sure they're going to have Gwede Mantash throwing a few fits.
But then the national government will be seen for what it is, trying to stifle solutions, trying to stifle getting an ending load shedding through innovation. And they're going to be seen for that.
But they're so far gone now.
They're
even
not going to care
even when Mavuso Msamang says it's good for the ANC to lose power. When the latest polls have them at under 35% in Gauteng, when the election comes around next time, they're gone. They're goners. So they should be trying now to damage control, to at least have a party that can participate in some kind of government after 2024.
Alec, we are 3 minutes. We've got 3 minutes. So we're going to breeze through these next two stories. Chris Palm is the Chief Risk Advisor at the Institute for Risk Management South Africa. And I had a chat to him this morning about their 2022 risk report. How risky is it to be in South Africa? What are the 10 flags? Social unrest, lack of political will, unstable electricity supply. There are several risk factors that inform scenario planning in South Africa. There are three scenarios. One is the perpetual hangover, which is the low road. Another one is fake it till you make it or not. And the other one is own our future. That's the one, the trajectory you want to be on. I asked him, just lay it out for me, Chris. Is South Africa yet a failed state? Here's his answer.
If we don't fix this, we will become a failed state. And from that point of view, I thought we added quite a lot of value in as far as identifying those drivers and, of course, also the pivots around those pivots, meaning if we can address, you know, some of the causes around these risks, then, of course, you know, we can make a difference. And if you ask, so how risky is South Africa? I believe if you look at the signs that are out there, and we are extremely risky at the moment, and we may have at least very close to our risk bearing capacity as a country.
Our risk bearing capacity as a country, we're at the precipice. So he personally doesn't believe we're a failed state yet, but we've been on a sliding slope, on a slippery slope for the past 6 years, where all the metrics continue in the wrong direction. Another metric that is going in a very bad direction, the rand.
Oh, the rand. Well, we spoke about it at the outset, and I spoke with Magnus Haystack, who's been a rand bear for just about as long as you can imagine. And maybe let's just listen quickly to what he had to say.
The potential for rising interest rates in the US, and then lastly, the potential for a recession in the US. And there is our danger. When people say, is the rand drop over? I say, I don't know. But if you look at history, when the US goes into a recession, commodities collapse and the South African currency collapses with it. So the currency can go, I'm not saying it will, it can go to as low as 19, even 20 in the next year, year and a half.
And that's a big story, because at the moment we're at 1723. We started the week last week, 1680. 3 months ago we were 1430. So it's a slippery slope. You talk about that with the currency. And really what the key point that Magnus is making is we've been bailed out in South Africa over the last 2 years by commodity prices. Now that there's concern about a global recession, commodity prices are no longer rising. They're turning around. Actually, there have been some big falls on the JSE. If you go and have a look at some of those share prices, what's happened to them in the last month is quite stark. And if commodity prices decline, then you don't get the taxes that are being generated through the profits that our mining companies are making. and that puts state finances under pressure.
Yeah.
Fortunately, we're going to probably overshoot in the current financial year, fiscal year, by about 100 billion rand because of the extra money that's coming through commodity prices. And that's been holding up the rand. But now the markets are looking 6 months forward and they're saying, what's going to happen in the next 6 months if commodity prices decline rather than go up? And what goes on in South Africa then when you start getting a squeeze in your public finances? That means that your rand comes under even more pressure. That's what Magnus is saying, and it's a conceivable issue.
Well, thank you for staying in our company for the last 30 minutes. If you've liked what we've done over the past 10 episodes, please like and subscribe to stay up to date with all the work that we do at BizNews. We'll see you next week.
Thanks, Michael. Cheerio.